Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
My name is Michael Bailey, and you're listening to the EDP Formula One podcast.
Hello all, welcome to the EDP F1 podcast to look back and enjoy a fantastic Korean Grand Prix, especially if you play to the EDP F1 rules of ignoring who wins or leads the whole thing and gets pole position and fastest lap and all that sort of stuff. If you ignore all the tables, look below the surface, cracking Grand Prix. Joining me in the pod this week, Kyle Cumbers and Perry Hamilton. Gentlemen, good evening.
Good evening to you.
Evening.
Are we all well?
Yeah, very. Thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, very well indeed.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not too bad. Not too bad. Just about squeezed in watching the race. As I need to, and you know what? I'm glad I did.
Yeah, definitely. It was worth getting up at 6:30 in the morning for, despite the fact that my other half was getting up to go to a car boot, and so I was awake anyway.
You turned down a car boot sale then to watch the Grand Prix?
Quite happily. Quite happily, yes. I did enjoy that. I do like a nice early start Grand Prix because it gets you up and you get into it. And you don't really have to do anything. You just sit there, and then you can start the day early and think, oh, good time to start a Sunday. Must be time to go back to bed and have a lie in. So I do like a nice early Grand Prix.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, they'll get earlier with Japan. It's quite a lot going on, really. Lots of things, lots of excitement, fires, random trucks, lorries on track, all manner of gold.
It was a very good Korean Grand Prix. Even sunshine. Yeah. Previous years has been quite gloomy and rainy, and
yeah. We didn't even need the typhoon. No,
that's a bit disappointing, actually. I was not looking forward to it.
Yeah, probably saved a few lives.
Kyle's a grim man.
Well, I did get to the point where I wondered if Bernie had put the whole thing out as a story just to, you know, engender some interest. Shall we get through the bit we were supposed to ignore early? Sebastian Vettel, obviously, supremely good in a supremely good car. He can now win the championship in Japan, and is probably just helpful if he does, isn't it? Gets out of the way.
Yeah, he needs to win it, and Alonso needs to be ninth or lower. I can see that happening. You know, I mean, that is, Ferrari have dropped so off the pace from how we saw them at the beginning of the season back in March. You know, we were effusive about Alonso and Ferrari and their chances. They finally put a car under him that he could use to win, and we were like, this is his year, he's going to win the championship. Red Bull look uncomfortable, you know, this, that and the other. Well, they've just blown out of the water, haven't they? I mean, maybe Seb took a little while to get comfy. I don't know, does he need to knock rust off? I mean, the guy's, you know, in terms of the car under him and what he's doing, statistics don't lie, he's the best driver on the grid. In terms of talent, I still think Alonso's better than him, but he doesn't have the vehicle to make that happen. So I'm always the one to say it's never over until it's mathematically impossible. I'm going to say it one race before it's mathematically impossible that it's over. I believe there's no coming back now, and that is a bit of a kicker when it's just before Japan. I mean, it used to be that Japan was pretty much the herald of the end of the season, and you could sort of look forward to it winding down. But what have we got? We've got Japan, India, Abu Dhabi, America, and then Brazil. I mean, if he wins it in Japan, you've got 4 Grand Prix there. That, I mean, really, I know there's sub-storylines, and there's who's going to end up driving where, and some people are going to end up driving for their future, and who's going to get that all-important 12th place to get the money and the constructors for the back-end boys. But really, we want to see a championship go down to the wire. We want to see Jenson Button winning it at Brazil by doing a fantastic drive. You know, that, to me, was one of the last really climactic ends to a championship season, and that, you know, is a shame when you think that was 2009.
Indeed. I believe Mr. Hamilton has since said that it's a switch off for the fans when someone's dominating so much.
That's a different Mr. Hamilton to me, right?
Yes, it is, yeah. Right. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he said he didn't watch during the Schumacher era, which is interesting.
But a lot of us can attest to that. Yeah. I mean, we didn't either. I didn't.
It's not as bad as that, because that was, at least the races seem close, and if you follow our rules of ignoring him, then the races are very good.
Exactly. Well said, Carl.
But yeah, I mean, I can't remember. It's a long time ago, but yeah, I don't think it's as bad as the Schumacher era.
But that's because it hasn't gone on as long. I mean, Schumacher won 5, 6, 7 championships, and I think 5 of them were in a row, 2000 to 2004, roughly, with Ferrari. And that hasn't happened yet. But after this year, that's 4 in a row for Senna. You know, next year, if he starts running out again, people are going to start thinking.
You did have Schumi winning by like 40 odd seconds, didn't you?
Which was a bit ridiculous.
And the tyres at that point between Bridgestone and whether it was Michelin or Goodyear.
I think it was Goodyear.
I can't remember, but it was.
They got special tyres.
You know, there were so many things in their favour that there is probably a more competitive element to this. But not much, in truth. Mm. But whether Seb will be crowned champion in Japan or not, you can't argue with how supremely he's driving at the moment. It's an interesting one. I mean, as I said, I picked up the fact that he is so ruthless. He does go for wins even if he maybe doesn't need them. They do have to stop him and calm him down. Christian Horner suggesting that he's already one of Formula One's greats, and I've kind of always thought, well, I think he'll only get that when he moves and does something something similar to what he's doing now at a different team or at a second team. But then still,
there's not many people
all adds up. I mean, Schumacher's probably the only one who really managed that. So
yeah, there's not many people who won 4 world championships in a row. So in 20 years' time, probably we'll look back on him as a great. And like I say, he's only 26, is he? It's quite scary. He could be the all-time. He could take over Schumacher's 7 wins. So,
well, Fangio won with I think three or four different,
indeed,
manufacturers, and that was, you know, he didn't start till he was in his late 30s.
No,
so I mean that's a different kind of thing. You know, there have been occasions where people change, but Fangio is regarded as one of the all time, if not the all time great. And so, yeah, I mean, Schumacher won titles with Benetton and Ferrari. Yeah. I mean, what other drivers on the grid at this point in time have won world championships with two different teams?
Well, Alonso won both his at Renault. Yeah. So
Lewis,
I think that's
won
probably
his
it.
With
McLaren, with
because
McLaren,
there aren't any more double world champions on the grid. I mean, it is a different era now when you're moving between teams. I think the team and the setup with everything they've got around them is probably different to jumping into a different car with a different engine, maybe about 60 years ago. But still, I mean,
even Michael Schumacher still had Ross Brawn, didn't he?
Yes, that's true.
So he needs to go a non-Adrian Newey.
Well, yeah, maybe. It depends if Ferrari tap up. Maybe he's part of the deal for 2016.
Could be, yeah.
We wonder. Adrian Newey will want a different challenge by then. There was a great interview, actually, by James Allen on BBC 5 Live with Adrian Newey. I don't know if you can catch it somewhere. Definitely worth a listen, really. Cracking stuff with a man who I think has had a slight say in what Red Bull have done over the last four and a bit years. Definitely. All right, well, fair play to Seb. He will be crowned.
Yeah.
Good for him.
I see it's a Mark Webber luck.
Yeah. Unluck, as I think a certain cyclist would call it. Here's a quick question then. Seb obviously wins the world championship. Who deserves to be second come the end of the season?
Who deserves to be second for me is Kimi Raikkonen. Kimi Raikkonen deserves to be second just through his consistency. Alonso has really dropped away from my radar in terms of what he's doing on the track. I watch him and I think, God, he's got talent. But I never look at him now and think, go on, son, you can do it. Go on. Because he's just always starting in 5th, 6th. Place, you know?
It's amazing how much that car has dropped off.
Really is. It just hasn't kept pace with the rest of the development, and I think that's a shame, really, for Ferrari and for Alonso. I mean, obviously, next season with Kimi, big deal. We'll figure out what goes on, whether it's going to motivate him or not, or whether it'll motivate the production and the development of the car. Who knows? But I think, for me, I would say Kimi deserves second place, but I think Alonso will get it.
Alonso second at the moment. Kimi just ahead of Lewis in third.
Yeah, I think Alonso's got 28 points ahead of them both.
Quite tight behind. It's,
yeah, I don't really know who deserves it more, to be honest. As a Hamilton fan, but I think whoever finishes second probably deserves it.
That's the way, Kyle. That's the way.
I would actually say both Mercedes drivers deserve a shout there. They've done great work with the single lap speed of that car. You know, the qualifying pace of that car is great, and occasionally it's shown flashes of brilliance on race day, but it hasn't shown the consistency. Whereas you flip that and you look at someone like Kimi, that Lotus is not a consistent race winner, nor is it a consistent, you know, top front row qualifier, and yet Kimi is sitting where he's sitting. That says something. That attests to the quality of the driver more so than it does to the vehicle.
I mean, I agree. Just look at the Constructors' Championship. Who's going to be second there? Probably, I think it's the point between Ferrari and Mercedes at the moment. I think Mercedes probably deserve second, just how far they've improved from last year.
Yeah, they've made great strides. Yeah. Which probably should take us to the Korean Grand Prix's EDP F1 pit stops. I want to talk about Mercedes here because really they should have probably got a whole lot better than what they managed, which I think was effectively Lewis's fifth place.
Yeah.
I mean, they royally mucked it up, didn't they? Rosberg's front wing just sort of broke, couldn't be bothered, and gave up the ghost. And then inexplicably keeping Lewis behind and not bringing Lewis in to have his pit stop because his tyres were beep, as he said. Just a muck up, and then of course that basically cost Lewis a podium.
Yeah, it just seemed a very strange sort of 10 laps. He just didn't seem to want to do anything because he lost pretty much a pit stop.
Yeah, 4 seconds. I think that's what Brundle said when they pulled him in. I mean, he's done effectively. He's missed out on doing a pit stop, and now he's got to do it again.
Yeah. It's crazy. Just seemed, and also, I mean, I think the safety car saved him in the way because they could then, because if they would have pitted earlier, I don't know if their tyres would have lasted that long. They may have to pit again later on and would have dropped further back, but. I mean, they couldn't have. I hope they weren't planning that a safety car could come. And just also the. And then, like I said, the strategy of when Rosberg's wing came off. I mean, you could have brought Hamilton in, or let him pass, brought Hamilton in straight away, 3 seconds, whether your pit stops in now, and then brought Rosberg in straight away. And then, I mean, Rosberg was going to be a while anyway, so.
Yeah.
Why keep Lewis behind?
Yeah. Well, that's a difficult one for me with the Rosberg issue because, yeah. Rosberg is going to take longer in the pit stop, but Rosberg was the more dangerous vehicle on the track at the time. So you had to pit Nico first. You had to, because of the way that wing was going.
I think you could have got him in.
Together and just
Your priority at that point, just purely because of the way that the FIA look at safety and then the way that the stewards look at safety, if you leave him out for too long... And I mean, and we saw what happened when Ferrari left Alonso out with his broken front wing towards the beginning of the season, and it just exploded underneath him, and it caused all kinds of mayhem and havoc. And if you have that happen again, when you can see that there's quite clearly something going on, and sparks flying, I mean, the sparks made it look more dramatic than it really was.
It looked cool, let's be honest. It wasn't the only thing that looked cool.
One of the commentators on Sky said, you know, Nico thought the car was going great because obviously he had a lower front wing, so he had, you know, nicer down, it was fitted to the ground, then he had a lot more control. He thought the car was brilliant, couldn't see the sparks because of how low down he was. But I don't know, you can't leave him out if your car is broken, which effectively it is, and all it takes is one bump. I mean, if you run wide on the exit of turn one into the pit lane, that pit lane is quite bumpy. Mm. You know, there are areas, if you take too much curb, that thing's going to go flying and cause danger. And that has to be a priority.
It does. I still think they could have let Lewis ahead. And I think because Nico would have had to have taken his time getting back, because he has to go around the track to get back, Lewis would have been in and stopped by the time Lewis had got there anyway, by the time Nico had got there anyway, I reckon.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that, I think, but at the time when you look on your pit wall and you go, Jesus Christ, that wing's going to fall off, your priority doesn't then suddenly go, how can we maximise this for both of us?
Yeah, how can we get Lewis?
Your priority goes, let's get Nico in, let's fix his wing, and let's deal with everything else later. So I can completely understand where they've come from. It didn't work out well for them. It wasn't a great opportunity, and they, you know, and it was a good chance for them to get points today, solid points, and they missed that. But yeah, it was just a bit unfortunate, but I don't disagree with the way that they did things because I think their priority has to be safety.
Yeah, fair enough. Interesting you bring up Alonso's front wing at Malaysia. I mean, I'm sure we'll be talking about that at the end of season reviews that we will do back then. Let's have a look at, well, let's do it in order, shall we? So we'll stop off at Pirelli because all of the weekend's action seemed to suddenly kick off with Sergio Perez's delamination
Yeah.
Which are truly spectacular and great, great to watch. Obviously, frighteningly dangerous, but, you know, just saying.
It seemed a bit harsh on Pirelli, because I think Pirelli said that them tyres would last 20 laps, and that was the 21st, 22nd lap on the tyre. So you can't really blame Pirelli for the...
No,
it was. Can't. I mean, I think Mark Webber said, once you've... They're locking up because the tyres are losing grip. There's not much tread on, so that's why they're locking up, but... It's pretty big lockup.
And at a very late stage when your tyre is effectively knackered.
So you can, and probably have been told to prepare these tyres like this, so you can't really blame them.
Drivers have been locking up front tyres ad infinitum. And of course it was the front right that went, which was the one that was in trouble for every car.
Exactly. Grip on as well, so...
I found it interesting about the tyres that they would grain and the drivers would complain about the graining, and then about three or four laps, five laps later, the graining would work its way off.
Mm.
And you would think, well, hang on a minute, that's obviously chewing through rubber quite quickly, you know, and you can kind of think, is that... I just remember sitting there thinking, the guys on the radio going, don't worry, they've worked through it, the graining's worked off, and I'm just thinking, well, surely that's not a good thing. Like, your speed is back up, but... You know, kind of like when they talk about the Inter's tyres, when you wear off too much rubber from the Inter tyres, because there's not a very deep tread, suddenly you get down to almost being on a slick. And I'm there kind of thinking, is that the kind of thing that you're doing? You're running down to this sort of raw rubber underneath, and then suddenly, bam, you see it go.
Mm.
And go it did.
Well, almost as much as Perez's blowout was fairly spectacular, there was a great shot of Sebastian Vettel's front right as he was riding around a corner. There were just bits on the inside shoulder of the tyre coming off as he drove around. You're like, where? You're losing a lot of rubber here, because this is like half a second's worth of footage in real time. And like,
Red Bull said he was 100% tyre wear.
Yeah, it was literally, it was at the drop off point, wasn't it? When they got on the radio to him and said, your was at the end of its life. Your right tyre was at the end of its life.
But as I've said all season, the tyres are the tyres. The teams have to deal with them.
Yeah.
I have no issue with it, because it's trying to create decent racing. The fact that a car is and driver is out there out in front is just a matter of fact. But
we would have got half the other racing without it. That drivers coming out and drivers, all of the F1 drivers who listen to the EDP F1 podcast will obviously disagree with me, but coming out and saying you need to change these tyres is like coming out and saying, can we take that chicane out of that straight, please? It is what it is. The track is the track and the tyres are the tyres. These are the regulations. You race within them. That's like saying, can I give myself a, you know, movable front wing? No, you can't. It's the regulations. This is what it is. You drive within them, and the teams have the responsibility to do it. The difference comes when you get, God, what am, have I got my safety hat on today? I was about to say, is when you start putting drivers at risk. But then who is the responsibility? Because as Kyle quite rightly said, you feel sorry for Pirelli. Pirelli come out and say, right, the safety limit of these tyres is 20 laps. 21 laps a tyre explodes. Fine. The teams all have the same information, and the teams all have the same tyres. So they have the responsibility. So when a driver comes out and says, Pirelli are making this sport dangerous, sorry, mate, point that finger back at your own garage. Your strategy and your engineers and your team bosses are making it dangerous by making you drive too far, too fast, too long, too hard on tyres that aren't set up for the wear of it. So actually, it's nothing to do with Pirelli. Blame your own team bosses.
If there was a Formula One badge underneath it, it would say too hard, too fast, too hard, wouldn't it? That would be like the slogan. And let's move on to Mark Webber and his never-ending bad luck, which presumably will end once he leaves Red Bull. There's something quite comic about Adrian Sutil ending up sort of rear-ending him, well, with the back of his car into the side, and he just sort of just out of the corner, just sliding sideways gracefully into Mark Webber, his car then blowing up. And
he was so casual. Yeah, he was just he just popped out of the car and just sort of looked over to the right, and you could tell he was thinking, yeah, that's about right.
Dude, there was a brilliant quote before the race in his I think it was on the press day on the Thursday, where he said, oh, last week I tried everything, and you know, I kept it all tight. Well, I was really prepared for it and focused for it. I got to almost the end and the car gave up. So this week I've just rocked up, had a few vodkas, and we'll see what happens. I think that's pretty much what he said. Oh, just to paraphrase it slightly, but he definitely used the V word. And then that happens. So that's probably why he was quite relaxed about it. It was quite comic stuff with the marshals, and then obviously the truck, which, goodness, it has since been, I think, written that the FIA, Charlie Whiting, had agreed for the truck to go on the track, before the safety car, which can be allowed in extreme circumstances. Yeah. I mean, whether that actually is true.
I'm expecting the car to go through.
The sight of just a truck on the track.
My personal opinion is that that's ridiculous. I think that's Charlie Whiting trying to save face for Korea, because they haven't yet decided fully whether it's going to be gone or not. They've had this purpose-built track and area, and if it's only lasted a few years and the amount of money, I mean, I seem to recall in your column, Michael, that you wrote it's losing over what?
$20 odd million last year.
Just in 1 year, you know, that's the amount of money that it needs to recoup. The stands were shockingly empty. I mean, come on, can you imagine if we had that purpose-built track here in the UK? Would those seats be empty? No, of course they wouldn't. You'd find fans coming from all over to watch these races. And I think it's just the fact that they haven't quite decided with it, because they don't want to put the nail in the coffin. And I think they're trying to save face. But to me, that is the nail in the coffin. You let a 4x4 truck that then slews dangerously straight across
the
track.
Like, yeah.
That's it. Not when it's on a straight. You come around the corner of the straight, it's the other end of the straight, you can see it, that's fine. But, I mean...
Well, the driver was probably getting a bit excited, you know, he was on the racetrack. Where's the fire?
Checkered flag, wasn't it? Yeah.
Did you see that they sort of pan to like corner four where they look back, and obviously the cars have gone through at that point.
Yeah.
And he's on one side of the track, and I think there's a Force India long way behind, and it just goes across the track at that point.
Yeah, Force India comes absolutely crazy. So I think to say that Charlie Whiting said, "Oh yeah, it was meant to go out," was little bit of face saving.
Yeah, but I think there's always a bit of that in Formula One.
Yeah.
I mean, it was interesting. You think that India's been dropped off the calendar completely. It's interesting that, you know, Korea is still possibly on there. We'll have to see what happens. So poor old Mark Webber. I have a feeling we'll be talking a bit more about him over the remaining weeks of the season as he goes hell for leather to go out in style. The fire did bring the safety car. Second safety car, wasn't it, after Perez's tyre. Yeah. And we then got the Lotus battle, which ultimately seemed to annoy Romain Grosjean. Partly, he seemed fairly good with it all at the end, but I mean, the gist of it is he made a mistake just before the truck was out on the track. That allowed Kimi Raikkonen to go past him and effectively take second place to the flag. Roman, I don't know, it seemed that the team were almost suggesting that Roman wanted to be allowed through,
yes,
in a way, but I don't really know where the benefit with that. And, and then after the race, Roman seemed perfectly happy that he'd made a mistake and it was his own fault.
We saw Consolarelli said he wants to be let, he said, I'm quicker than Kimi, can you let me through? And they said no, you can overtake him.
Yeah.
There's no like, you got to stay there, you can overtake him. And then he said, oh, I can't. I think as a team, you sort of, you know, go on. I think, and Eric Goulet then came on, you know, keep racing, you know.
Yeah,
go for it. And that, to me, that's the way it should be.
Yeah. You
know? However, picture this. Would they have said to Roman if it was the two Lotus out front and Seb wasn't anywhere to be found and Kimi was leading that race and Roman came on the radio and said, oh, go, do you think they would have said to him then, yeah, go race? I like to think they would. I mean, I'm not saying that they wouldn't, but it's just a question to ask. When you've got second and third, yeah, go race. Go see if you can get past him. And this is Romain Grosjean we're talking about. He's not exactly the safest, most skillful driver.
Hey, I'm not having any of this anymore.
No, come on, he's not.
I mean,
he's no Maldonado, but not anymore. But he's not exactly the most dependable guy. Your bum would wink if he was going up the inside of Kimi, right? It would be like a rabbit's nose. You would be that nervous, especially if you were a team boss and Kimi was in first place. So I don't know, but I like the fact they said to him, go race. And as you quite rightly say, Carl, if you're faster than the guy, catch
you will be able to pass him.
Keep it going.
Make it happen, you know.
I mean, this is before Kimi signed Ferrari, so they probably would have said, yep, keep it as it is. But I think as Sky was saying, as Kimi's now gone, Grosjean's, you know, next year probably in the team. And like, so they want to sell to sponsors and say, look, he's the man. He's as quick as Kimi. I'm sure that's why they said go for it. I mean, it looks good on for Lotus next year if they can say Grosjean overtook Kimi. Second place in Korea.
Tell you what, if Roman can do this kind of stuff for the rest of the season, I think I feel slightly vindicated in saying dark horse and, you know, a man to prove a point. I think it'd be a great.
If Roman had been able to do this stuff for the whole of the season, then I feel that you would have been able to make this point. But he hasn't. You know, you can't have a late season surge and then suddenly go, oh, look at this guy, isn't he brilliant?
I think you can do it to look forward to next season.
Oh, for looking forward to next season.
And book a seat.
But hang on, haven't we been looking forward to Romain Grosjean since like two or three seasons ago? Haven't we been looking forward to this breakout year from this very quick but immature, inexperienced driver? Oh, next year he's learned, next year he's learned. I've said that hundreds of times.
It's coming, Ped. It's coming.
All right.
It's coming. It's coming. Okay. Long wheelbase car debuted in the race, and you know, you'd look at it and say second and third, well, obviously, is a good idea. Mm. Both well for 2014 as well, of course. We haven't mentioned Nico Hülkenberg yet, and we are running out of time, but we should, talk about late season rallies. Mm. He's starting to show. It's interesting because he got a lot of coverage. He wrote raced, so he deserved the coverage. Mm. A lot of radio play through his personality and all this sort of stuff. There's a bit of a love in at the moment, isn't there?
Yeah, we are all on the Hulkster bandwagon, really. He's he's the darling. But I think it's great for him. I really do. I've already, but it's well known, and I agree. He's a hot tip to be in that spare Lotus seat next year. It'd be interesting to see what he could do with a race-winning car, because don't get me wrong, you know, the Lotus is a race-winning car. It can win races. Is Hülkenberg the guy to win races in it? I don't know. Maybe. We could see that next year. We'll certainly see podiums from him. We will certainly see podiums. Put Nico Hülkenberg in a Lotus, he'll definitely get a podium here or there.
If you're talking about a Lotus that can compete as it has this year, I think he would win races. Yeah. And I remember being told before he made his Formula One debut by people who had known him through some of the junior formula that he was definitely the real deal.
I mean, he nearly won the Force India last year in Brazil, didn't he? So, I think, yeah.
Exciting stuff. We will see. We should also mention duty bound through our Norfolk routes. Caterham coming so close, in terms of position wise at least, taking 13th place that would have regained them 10th in the Constructors' Championship. Charles Peak was 14th. Mm. Guido van der Garde was 15th. So just one place short. Just one small retirement away from regaining 10th place.
But Guido could have been up there.
He could have been,
but if he didn't have his little cheeky drive-through penalty.
Yeah, I think he felt a bit hard done by, as most drivers do whenever they get a penalty for anything. But good old Caterham, five more shots at getting 13th or better.
I have to say, in terms of their development this year, when we were talking about Caterham at the beginning of the year, I seem to recall saying, why are they even bothering? I seem to remember saying, just close the book on them. They're done. You know, that. Why are they even bothering to do this? Because you have to remain competitive. They're creeping up there. They're creeping up there. They're three places away from points there.
Well, they're back to about 1.2 seconds off the midfield, which is kind of where they've been for about 2 years. I think they dropped off a bit and now they're back there. But obviously with all the moving and things like that, you'd like to think, and the fact they didn't start this year with a new car. No. It only arrived sort of after a few months. So we will see. It's going to be an interesting few months, hopefully, for Caterham. Okay, it's our of the week discussions. I don't think some of these are going to take very long, to be honest, which, as we're running out of time, might be a good thing. Driver of the weekend?
Hülkenberg.
Grosjean.
Okay. I'd have given it to Nico. I think the way he held off Hamilton
was a lot of fun. But alternative.
I'll take Roman as well. That's brilliant. Team? No, sorry, Goat first. Goat.
Goat. Sutil and DeResta, both of them. How bad do you have to be to spin? How bad do you have to be to spin when there's no contact? I mean, okay, Sutil was at least battling. Sutil was going into a corner after a safety car kind of thing, and there was a bit of craziness there, that's fine. But he didn't even get contact. He just put his wheel on the curb, and he lost it. DeResta was shocking.
He is in a rut.
He is in a terrible rut, and it would not surprise me with this run of form if he doesn't get a drive next year with the way that he's performing right now. Mm. You know, he's not lived up to his hype at all. And it's been shocking because there is so much potential. And there's a difference between potential and hype. Mm. The hype is Paul DeResta is the fastest guy. That, you know, he's really, really good. He's the next British superstar. He's not done that. But the potential, he is quick. He is fast. He's had some really good finishes. And he's had some great qualifying. But he just needs that extra level of concentration. The only difference between him and Romain Grosjean or Pastor Maldonado is that when he lapses in concentration, he doesn't take anyone else
out.
No,
he puts himself in the wall,
Exactly, and that's why no one's come up on this and said the same thing, you know, oh, he's just dangerous, he's that, he's, you know, the other. But no one's really reprimanding Paul de Rester in public as they did when Grosjean was crashing out and when Maldonado was, because he's not endangering other guys. He's just making himself look like an idiot. And it pains me because he's such a good driver.
And he's sort of built on being fairly, you know, solid. And you can be he's reliable. And this is his third year now. And that's right, isn't it? It's almost a spectacle. These are things that he's never done before, just slinging the car into walls, and not in such a confined period.
I mean, he's junior Formula. They all said he was as quick as Vettel. He won a championship.
I can't remember which championship
but
it was.
But like I say, it's his third year now, and I mean, he should be outperforming Sutil probably a long way, because Sutil had a year off. I mean, Hülkenberg last year sort of overtook him towards the end of the season, points and stuff. So like I say, he's had 3 years. Top teams will look at him and think, well, he's okay, but is he going to be the next big star? And they might just
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't risk it. I'm going to make a bold prediction.
Love it.
It's a bold statement. I'm going to make a bold statement. I would rather have had Kamui Kobayashi in that Force India this year than Paul de Rester.
Especially this weekend.
Goosebumps, mate, when he got that podium last year. It was amazing. But still, I genuinely think that Paul de Rester has been disappointing. He hasn't even been an also-ran this year. I mean, he's just a disappointment. And Kamui was always exciting.
He's still got the fun to get him back into Formula 1, though, so don't worry. You know, maybe the fun will kick in. I do want to make a mention of Mercedes for Goat of the Week, because I still think they were the ones who cost Lewis his podium. Team of the weekend?
For me, is Lotus. Yep. Great drive. Put a really decent car out there. Managed their team really well, especially when we talked about it earlier, letting, you know, say, go ahead and race for it. Absolutely fine, I think. A great job by Lotus. You bring two cars home on the podium, you've got to be a shoo-in for it.
I agree. Also mentioned for Sauber.
Yeah, definitely. A great qualifying with Gutierrez. So, yeah. Awesome. And that leaves highlight. What you got, car?
Apart from the truck on the track.
That was a pretty big highlight.
Probably the battle of Hülkenberg and Lonsdale and Hülkenberg and Hamilton. I thought it was just a really good battle.
Certainly with Lewis.
Written down on my notes here, gentlemen, says battle for fourth, lap 47, Hülkenberg, Hamilton, Alonso, Button.
Yep.
That, for me, I mean, there was a little bit earlier on as well, there was a nice battle between Roman and Kimi, and that was good. And I think Roman and someone else had a really good battle quite early on in the race, and that was enjoyable as well. But it was all lower down, sort of three or four cars in a row, everyone. I mean, there was a great moment where Massa Maldonado...
Bottas was there
Bottas
as well.
Bottas was there as well. And I think maybe a Force India, maybe Sutil.
Sutil, maybe.
Or it might have been Gutierrez. It was Perez. Was it Perez?
I can't remember.
Maldonado lost four places.
Yeah. And ended up behind his teammate.
And Massa was going around the outside. And then everyone cut in. There were so many place changes that I lost it. It was really, really good. And that's the thing. We lose this Korea circuit through ineptitude of fire marshals and general officiating and a lack of interest in the surrounding area. You lose that, you know, money being thrown down the drain. But it's a great track. There's overtaking opportunities. There's some really nice straights. There's some sharp corners. There's the possibility for big splashes and safety cars and people getting too tight. It's a really, really good track. And we're going to lose it off of the calendar. It's a real shame.
That pit lane exit worked as well. It was a brilliant pit lane exit.
Yeah, wasn't it? That's true, actually. Yeah, good point. I think that was it. There was a nice bit when Webber got out of the car, sort of looked back at it. It's like, oh, it's on fire. And then they cut back to him later, and the fire marshal was obviously having a tough time knowing exactly where to put the fire extinguisher. And Mark Webber just sort of stroked him on the back. He's like, "No, there, it'll be all right.
Don't worry." But I've got that written down as well on my notes. Well, Webber, casual with fire.
This is it. I mean, he's probably still drunk on his vodka. So that's a joke, by the way.
Good thing you didn't breathe on the flames and gone up even further.
Indeed.
What I absolutely love, just a quick shout out to Martin Brundle here as well, though. Absolutely love the fact that all Martin Brundle was saying was, not to mention, oh, he was just in a car that was on fire. But he was going, here's hoping that doesn't ruin his engine, because he doesn't want to go through a new engine right now. If they can make that engine stick, because he's only got 8 for the season. And I think really, really concerned over Mark Webber's engine quota for the year, I think.
I would imagine Red Bull are currently in a garage trying to come up with a second car to put Mark Webber in for Japan.
Awesome. quickly on Martin Brundle, no grid walk this week.
I literally turned the race on at 6:59 and saw the parade lap and saw the start. I didn't see anything
of
that.
He doesn't do them when it's a long walk, I think, from the grid to the press box. Okay. And with a lot of the new tracks, it's actually quite difficult to get from the grid to the commentary box. Yeah. Whereas the old tracks, I think you just jump over a fence and you're there. A lot of the modern press boxes, you can't even see the track. You're literally in a in a box tucked away, which I think is the issue at Silverstone partly as well. So yeah, probably that.
Okay, fair enough.
But you know, I get a bit bored of them now. They're a bit old hat, aren't they, grid walks?
No, never. No?
Say that.
Never.
No. You're just looking up when David Coulthard bumps into Martin Brundle and it all gets a bit awkward.
Yeah. It's all fun. No, I do like a grid walk, but it tends to be the same question. I have a running joke with my other half that, and there's no disrespect intended here, but I always say to her, you could do Lee McKenzie's job. Because it appears to be,
come on,
everything that Lee McKenzie does, because it was, I think it was the first season that the BBC had it back when you had like Jake and Lee, and I mean she does a lot now for the BBC coverage, which is great.
She's been doing it for years at every level. She knows her stuff.
She does know her stuff, but it seemed to be,
makes it look easy
every time. It seemed to be that every question she asked was, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, that.
Or if she mixes it up every now and then, it's, you've got to be disappointed.
But the thing is, Natalie Pinkham, when she started with the BBC, she actually said, oh, I've got some great advice from Lee McKenzie. She just said, look, whatever happens, even if you haven't seen it, just go up to them and go, so just tell us what happened.
Yeah, and that happens all the time. Tell us what happened and how do you feel about it?
But, I mean, they are the questions.
They are the questions. That's what you want to know. But everything's so guarded. It's nice to see someone like Lewis Hamilton coming out and actually being more of himself now, I think, at Mercedes. You know, he's cussing on the radio, which is great. He's coming out and saying fans are bored by it, you know, whereas everyone else, that's a PR disaster. You can't go out and call out another team like that and say this, that and the other. That's not right.
Wow.
But Lewis is doing it, you know, and I think to be able to, but everyone's so guarded, you know, you go, how does that make you feel? Well, obviously I'm disappointed. I've just crashed out of a race. I could have got some points. It's the obvious questions. We don't want to know that. But the questions that we want to know the answer to, they're not going to tell us. So what was that? Was that a fuel leak? Was that the gearbox? What went wrong there? They're not going to say, oh, yeah, our gearbox falls out after about 50 laps because the car's crap. They're not going to say stuff like that. So it's a difficult one to joke about. And I'm only just kidding with that. I only said that she could do Lee's job because I wanted to do Jake's job. It comes from a level of professional jealousy. But it just seemed to be every time, like, oh, you know, Jensen, very disappointing for you to fall out after the lap three. How do you feel about that? Tell us what happened out there. It just seems to be the same stuff over and again.
Oh, well. Thus is sports journalism, to be honest. All right, then, let's wrap this up. Gents, thank you so much for your time, Ped, Kyle.
Always.
And for you out there listening. We'll be back with a Japan preview. They're back-to-back races, so it's a quick turnaround. Japan will be with us this coming weekend, so we'll get our preview out pretty quickly. Join us on Twitter. I'm at Michael J. Bailey. The official EDP F1 Twitter feed is uniquely called at EDP F1. Ped, you are?
At PedHD56.
Kyle?
At Kcumbers.
So have a chat, whatever. We're on Twitter. Also, check out our new EDP F1 Facebook page. That is, I think it's facebook.com/EDPF1. I think, and obviously,
surely if you just search EDPF1 on Facebook,
that would come up.
I think it would.
So like us on Facebook. I think that's the official terminology. EDP24.co.uk/F1 for the latest Lotus and Caterham news, and this podcast and my weekly column. There is nothing more you could want. Probably, of course, get in contact if there is. Until next time, we'll see you soon. Bye for now.